Welcome back. 1244, 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. Happy Friday to Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. Hello, Stephen.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. I'm sure you got that special someone something very special for this day, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. I saw the headline, Democrats seek to force vote on minimum wage and immigration. How are they going to do this?
It's called a discharge petition, and this is something that exists. It's a political or a parliamentary procedure that exists in the House and only the House. The House is run, you know, the majority party has complete control over the floor in the House. They have the Rules Committee, and they bring everything to the floor under their own rules for debate, with one exception, which is that under the rules, the minority party can launch a discharge petition, or anybody can launch a discharge petition, which is if they get enough signatures of a majority of the House, they can force a bill onto the floor despite the majority's opposition to it and the majority's reluctance or refusal to bring it to the floor. So what literally, they write their own rules for debate, and if they get enough people to sign that petition on those rules for debate, it automatically has to come to the floor under a certain amount of time. So they've said they will start first with a discharge petition on the minimum wage, and then they said soon we will see a discharge petition on immigration as well.
Is this procedure used often?
No, it's used, it's tried maybe a handful of times, a half dozen times every Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think we're at six right now. If they go through with these two, that'll bring us to eight. It's almost always purely a political show. It's rarely do you actually expect to be successful for it. You do it in order to try and pressure the majority party, where you think there are members of the majority party that are in tough districts where their constituents might want to see them favor a bill. You do it in order to basically get them to have to go on the record. You know, a lot of these votes are all political show.
Yeah.
You're doing
mm-hmm.
them in order to get people to have to vote one way or the other so that their constituents back home will vote for or against them based on the way they voted. For the minority party, when they don't get a chance to actually force their votes, you know, the Republicans who control the House, they can set up votes to embarrass Democrats left and right. Democrats have a much tougher time doing that. So a discharge petition gives them a chance, even if they don't force it to the floor, they go back to voters back home and say, he wouldn't even sign the discharge petition to get the immigration bill to the floor. So you know, immigration rights advocates, Hispanic voters, you should be angry at this guy. So that's what this is about. The chances that this one is successful, I actually think it's very low. The Democrats said they think they actually have a chance on it because they think there are a number of Republicans who would vote for this bill if it got to the floor. I don't actually think that's true, but, you know, we may end up seeing that. The last successful discharge petition was back in, I think it was 2001, 2002 Congress. It was on campaign finance reform. It's sort of instructive. What happened is that was something where you had mostly Democrats. Republicans controlled the chamber. You had mostly Democrats who supported it, but because of John McCain's recent presidential run where he'd made this a big issue, and because a bill had come out of the Senate on campaign finance reform, there was a lot of pressure, and there were a few Republicans who really wanted to take that issue up and make it a big thing, and so they went ahead and pushed, they signed a discharge petition, and finally it got right next to the number where you would need to get across the 218 to force the bill onto the floor. And at that point, Republican leaders said, okay, we know you're going to get there. Withdraw the discharge petition. We'll go ahead and bring the bill to the floor. So it's the sort of thing where if you do get close to success and it's clear that you're going to succeed, at that point the majority party usually just relents and says, okay, we'll go ahead and do it without making you go through the final few steps.
Okay, is this the biggest thing to come out of this Democrat retreat that occurred yesterday on the Eastern Shore?
Yeah, actually, they're in the middle of meeting right now as well,
hearing
from President Obama. They heard from Vice President Biden earlier this morning. So far, that was the biggest thing, and that was intended to be their big news out of their Thursday sessions was, hey, we're going to go ahead and try and force, in particular, they actually, it's sort of interesting, they were hoping to focus on the minimum wage. They came out and had their press conference announcing, we're going to do a discharge petition on the minimum wage. What was funny is they kept getting questions from reporters who said, well, But the minimum wage, that's probably not going anywhere. You know, it'll likely be filibustered in the Senate, and you probably don't have enough Republican votes on that. But immigration, you guys are saying you have 30 or 40 Republicans who would vote for a bill in an instant. Why aren't you doing immigration as your first discharge petition instead? And the Democrats got very defensive about that. And, you know, this is my interpretation, but it almost seemed like they sort of got talked into by those questions. They got talked into having to say, oh, yeah, immigration's coming very soon. They called the press conference to say we're doing minimum wage, but by the end of it, because of that pressure from reporters, to be honest, they were saying, yeah, immigration's next too, very soon. We're going to do that. Everybody's going to get a chance on that too. So they intended the news to be minimum wage. Immigration being such a wonderful thorny issue that leaves everybody uncomfortable ended up being the news.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to move to something else. The EPA's use of secret email addresses was widespread. Wasn't just one or two, huh?
Yeah, that's right. So we've talked about a couple of these, you know, in particular Lisa Jackson, the former administrator who used her private email. But what we're learning is that I believe 17 top EPA officials or former and current EPA officials is the current count of those who use their private email, including several who have outright told investigators that they didn't use their private email for business. One, a guy named James Martin, said he'd only used it for one scheduling matter, and then a couple of emails came to light where he had contact with environmental groups on his private email discussing business, and so that he actually ended up resigning fairly soon after that. The EPA says he didn't resign over that, but it sure looks like interesting timing. And then more recently, there's EPA is broken up into regions, and they have regional administrators as well as the overall EPA administrator. And several of these regional administrators have ended up being shown to have used their personal emails for business. The guy I just talked about, James Martin, used to be EPA Region 8 Administrator, I believe. We now also see that there's a guy, I believe the Region 9 Administrator, had said he didn't use his email, his personal email for business. Well, according to the Republicans on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, who've gone ahead and reviewed all the information that they've gotten, it turns out that that's not true either. So the big thing about this is that those Republicans are actually saying not only is this more widespread than we thought, but the EPA's own internal watchdog, its Inspector General, last year released a report clearing the administration or the EPA of having done this. They said, no, we don't find that they went outside, that they were actively doing this outside the law in order to skirt the law. And I guess this Region 9 administrator had actually told the investigators he didn't use his email for his private email for public business. Well, it turns out, according to the Republicans, he absolutely did do that. And I didn't get I emailed him yesterday asking for comment and didn't get a response back. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what he says.
It was a big surprise. All right. And finally, from the category of Another One Bites the Dust comes this. Republican Congressman Doc Hastings from Washington State says that's enough, huh?
Yeah, it'll be 20 years at the end of this year that he will have been serving. He said, you know, this is one of those guys. He said he wants to spend more time with his family, and there are no scandals, nothing like that pushing him out. I think he's been chairman of his committee, which is the Natural Resources Committee in the House for 6 years, and that means he will be term limited and could not keep that chairmanship at the end of this term. So it's sort of a natural time for him to step down. He said he's 73. All of his children, and now that means all of his grandchildren, are finally living back in Washington where he's from. And he said, look, I want to watch him grow up. And this is one of those times that I believe that explanation. This is a guy who really does want to spend time with his family.
Yeah, makes sense. Is that seat safe?
It looks like it, yeah. I mean, he won with, I believe, 66% of the vote. Both McCain and Romney in the last two presidential elections won about 60% of the vote in that district. So it looks like it should be safe. You know, the main question there is where Democrats say this is a guy who he's a moderate Republican. I actually don't know how much I agree with that description, but they say he's a moderate longtime Republican, and his departure is another sign that the Republicans are too extreme. You know, we'll have to see. The Democrats are pointing to these retirements as reasons why they think they might have a chance to recapture the House. I saw the Washington Post talk with experts. They ran this through computer models and said the chance for Democrats to retake the House, I believe, was 1%. So
wow.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right, Stephen, thank you for your help. Have a great weekend. We'll talk next week.
My pleasure, Andy.
Stephen Dinan, political editor here at the Washington Times. 1253, 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.